Good. So we're going back into the Haggadah, continuing from last time. Again, trying to approach it with like Berosh Gadol. Again, this kind of like a zoomed out perspective, which is what we're going to do. Trying to get, again, according to Rav Leuchter, like the story. That's our goal when reading the Haggadah, is to try to sense the thrust of the story. What's the story? That's what we're listening for. That's what we're trying to understand from reading the Haggadah. Which is just interesting because, like, have you guys seen this? Like, over the past week, I've encountered like a lot more. Maybe I've encountered more. Maybe I've just been more attuned to. People talking about the importance of stories. You know, like I work in data, as you guys know, like I work in the research that we're doing, and we're now collecting all the like tons and tons and tons and tons of data points that we have and trying to figure out like how to present it, you know? And two of my colleagues were just like, just both like posted articles about like, we have to have a story. Like that's how you present data. Like you have a ton of the data, but what you do with it is that you tell a story with it. And that's how you create change. That's how you like present what you have, you know? So I was like, that's so cool. That's exactly what we're talking about. Like just the theme of stories is coming up. The other thing is that, does anyone know who Doris Kearns Goodwin is? Like she's my aunt. Okay. Doris Kearns Goodwin is like one of the most famous historians right now in America, probably. She won like, I think the Pulitzer Prize. Is that what you win for literature? She wrote that like giant book about Abraham Lincoln that I've been referring to over the years that you've known me. So she's like she's a very, very well-known historian, and she gives like, you know, masterclass. That website that gets like the masters to give classes on things. So she gives a master class on history and presidential history, which is like awesome. So Jeff and I were watching like a few clips of hers. And that's exactly what she says. You know, she started by telling a story about Lyndon B. Johnson. Now, I don't actually know anything about Lyndon B. Johnson. Do you guys know anything about Lyndon B. Johnson? And she started by telling the story that he had like a heart attack when he was 40. He was like super powerful. He was always like the most powerful kid in class, the most powerful guy in college. And then he like became the president. He was the most powerful majority leader. He was the most powerful minority leader. He became president, and he had a heart attack at like in his 40s, like relatively young. And they said that even after he like recovered from his heart attack, he was like bedridden. He like did not talk or move for like several days. And then finally, he just like rose with a certain like fire in him, and he's like, oh my God, what's it called? He's like civil rights. Like civil rights, that's my thing. And they're all like, are you okay? And he just said that like he almost died, and then he was like languishing, like, why am I here? Why am I the president? Like, what am I doing here? And then he decided that like civil rights was going to be his thing. And he said that everyone was like, don't do it. You're gonna get slammed. You're gonna lose all your popularity. And he's like, why am I the president if not to do this? And like he pushed through civil rights. So like, right, those stories, I had no idea Lyndon B. Johnson. I didn't know anything. Maybe it's just me. I don't know. I tend to not know this kind of, right? I didn't know anything about Lyndon B. Johnson, but now she told a story about him, and now I know who he is. And she was saying Lincoln also. We know Lincoln for like the few famous like words that he gave over, but actually what he always did was tell stories. That was like his way of communicating. So again, right, that's the theme here. Haggadah is telling us a story. It's Haggadah. It's telling us a story. Okay? Again, so that's just the introduction. Now we're gonna go through it again. So last time we went through Maggid up to the Arba Banim. Right, and now we start with Mitzchila Od Ve'Avodah Zarah Avosenu. Right, and this, according to a lot of people, is where we start the story of the Haggadah. Again, the story kind of like going back. Right, so it's saying our forefathers were Ovdei Avodah Zarah. So again, what is the story telling us? So far, again, we're going according to Rav Leuchter's Mahalath. That's the Haggadah that I have in front of me. And again, it's trying to tell us that Hashem extends His hand into history for the sake of the Jewish people. And also for the sake of the Jewish people as a klal, and for the sake of Jewish people as individuals. Hashem extends His hand into history, into the course of natural history, for the sake of Bnei Yisrael. That is basically the message of the story. That's like it. That's what we're trying to learn. And we do it through the story and the text of the Haggadah. So again, Mitzchila Ovdei Avodah Zarah Hayu Avosenu. In the beginning, we were idol worshippers. Ve'achshav Akirvanu Hamakom LaAvodaso. And now we're close to Avodas Hashem. Right? So again, it originally, it's not that Avraham, through like a course of natural events, came upon Hashem, and then he became like Hashem's chosen people, la-di-da, right? It's that Avraham also was seeped in Avodah Zarah, and the creation of Avraham, the creation of our Avos themselves, were even yesh me'ayin, right? And Chazal tell us that the Avos were actually barren, right? So even their physical existence was yesh me'ayin, Hashem reaching His hand into nature and creating them. And for sure, their spiritual existence was Hashem reaching His hand into nature and creating them. And then we quote Yehoshua. Vayomer Yehoshua el'am, komar Hashem. So Yehoshua is basically retelling the story of Bnei Yisrael. And again, you'll hear what the theme is here. It's hard if you're just reading through it and you're looking at the English translation, which is why, again, we do this before we actually get to Seder night, because then we know, we've heard it before and we understand the emphasis of it. So listen to it, right? Komar Hashem, this is what Hashem says. Be'iver hanahar yashvo avsecha me'olam, right? You're from this Terech Avi Avraham v'Avi Nacho, right? You're from this like random tribe, sort of, who were Avdei Avodah Zarah, who lived in a certain area. V'yavdu l'chnei chayrim, and they all served Avodah Zarah. Okay? V'ekach, I took, as Avichan, as Avraham e'iver hanahar, I took Avraham away from that tribe. V'olich oso b'chol Eretz Kanan, I led him through Eretz Kanan. V'arba Zaro, and I made his offsprings grow. Ve'etin lo etz Yitzchak. I gave him Yitzchak. Ve'etin le Yitzchak as Yaakov, as Esav. Ve'etin le Esav. Ve'etin le Esav as Harseu v'ashes Osov. Yaakov v'vanav yordan mitzrayim. Right? I did it. The creation of the Avos, which is how the underpinning of Bnei Yisrael's relationship to Hashem by the time you get to Mitzrayim, is Hashem's doing also. Right? It's all Hashem. Baruch Shomer Havtachas Ol Yisrael. That's the next paragraph. Right? We praise Hashem for keeping his promises to Bnei Yisrael. Baruch Hu Shekodesh Baruch Hu Chishav Esaketz. Right? That Hashem basically said to Avraham, you know, you're Yodei Tzedaki Gir Yihaz Archa Ba'aretz Lolehem. Right? They will be slaves. They will be exiled. V'yavdum V'inu Osam V'arba Me'os Shana. And they'll serve them for 400 years. V'gam Esagoy Asher Yavdu Dan Anochi V'achrechen Yetzu Beruchosh Gadol. But I'm going to judge the people who are mistreating them, and they'll go out. Right, so this was the promise, and we thank Hashem for keeping his promise. So what's the issue with, like, thank you Hashem for keeping your promise? Like, what's the obvious question about that kind of thing? Like, let's make a big deal. Hashem kept his promise. Woohoo!
Isn't that like a given?
Good, Bracha, you're like, very nice. You know, I wouldn't even expect people to like make a parade if I keep a promise of mine. So like, this is the basics of integrity. The basics of integrity is that if you make a promise, you keep it. So like, why do we have this whole like, Baruch Shomer Avtachas Ol Yisrael, Baruch Hu, like, yay, Hashem kept his promise, right? Because it's not only about keeping your promise, it's also about the fact that he gave the promise, right? The basis of the promise is, they will go down to Mitzrayim, but I will take them out. Right? They will go down, but I will take them out. So it's basically Hashem, like, enmeshing himself with the existence of Klal Yisrael. So it's not only the fact that Hashem kept the promise, but we're thanking Hashem for having made the promise, because that's what tied us together, right? And that's what tied him into the history of Bnei Yisrael, or whatever you want to say. That's what tied him, us and him, into the history of the world, okay? And then we say, V'hisha amda. So if you don't have the paragraph about Baruch Shomer Avtachoso, then we say, V'hisha amda, that's what has stood for us, right? V'hisha amda, you know, Shweki or whoever it is who like sings the song, Baruch Levine, V'hisha amda. It's like, it's actually an ambiguous reference if you don't know what the Haggadah is talking about. That's what has stood for us. What has stood for us? The Havtacha that we just mentioned. Baruch Shomer Havtachoso Yisrael. That Havtacha that Hashem said to Avraham, right, I will be in history with them. I will send them down. I will take them out. That was for them, it's also for us. It's Hashem's promise that he's going to be enmeshed in our history. And we're not threatened by anybody. All right, again, it's one of my favorite paragraphs. Is it one of your favorite? Like, I love it. I love, like, holding the coast and, I don't know, singing your family's tunes. Like, my family, so one of my, like, great uncles somewhere was, like, a chazan in Europe. And we have all these, like, beautiful tunes for the Seder that are just, like, so geschmack. I remember in seminary, right, like, none of us had our own Seders. And I was, like, the head of the second Seder, of course, because, like, everyone thought that I should do that. And I just remember us all singing around the table, like screaming our own family tunes so that we like heard our family tunes, and no one wanted to hear anyone else's family tunes. Everyone wanted to hear like the way that our family did it. We just like this table of like 12 girls all like singing out of the top of our lungs the way that we wanted to be sung, right? So again, each of them is like so beautiful. That's what it's talking about. It's talking about Hashem's promise to enmesh himself with us in history, that we're not threatened by Hitler, we're not threatened by the Crusades, not in that order, right? Like, we're not threatened by Paro or Haman, we're not threatened by any of these people. We know that Hashem will extend himself into history and save us again and again. That's what he's done. It's what he's going to do. Okay, good. Then we go on. Skip the page. Okay, Tse Ulmat. Okay, again, now he says, go out and learn. Okay, go out and learn. Remind me afterwards, I'll tell you my dream about Tse Ulmat. But anyways, okay, Ma Bikesh Lavan Ha'arami Lasos LeYaakov Avinu, right? What Lavan wanted to do to Yaakov Avinu? Shapar Lo Gazar Ela HaZacharim, the Lavan Bikesh Lakor Sakol. So now we have this like weird comparison happening over here between Lavan and Paro, where Paro actually looks like the good guy relative to Lavan, and we're sort of like, what is happening here, and why are we talking about Lavan, and like, what just happened, right? And again, this is what we're trying to do. We're trying to listen to the story. Why did we just switch tactics to now compare Lavan and, not switch tactics, switch like gears to compare Lavan to Paro? Like, what is going on here, right? And then it quotes something, and then it goes into the quote. So again, now we have to zone out and say what's going on here. So again, in terms of the story, right? The story, the lesson of the story that Hashem extends himself into history. The Lavan Paro thing is actually the setup of all Mitzrayim. Because what it's saying to us is that Lavan was a significant character. Why? Because while Paro and the Mitzrayim, it sets up both the animosity that we encountered from Mitzrayim and also why we had to be there at the same time. That's what this paragraph does. So it says, again, Paro tried to kill Bnei Israel, as we know, right? And again, later on, it's going to tell us, it's going to go a little bit more into that. Lavan tried to deny the existence of Bnei Israel. And when Yaakov and his family were leaving Mitzrayim, when Yaakov was leaving Lavan's house, I don't think I actually pulled up this quote. I think I just thought about pulling up the quote. I'm sorry. Let's see if I can go up. Hold on a second. I'm going to not spend my time trying to find it. When they were leaving Lavan's house, Lavan basically came out and said, like, what do you mean? These are my daughters and these are my grandchildren. Like, where are you going? Right? Like, these are my children. He didn't even say goodbye to me. And he's all like flabbergasted about that. Right? So again, Chazal kind of like go crazy about that kind of interaction that he has with Yaakov. Lavan was trying to kill Yaakov. Lavan was trying to kill his grandchildren. Like, what's going on over here? Right? But the point is, Lavan was basically saying, like, this is natural. Like, I'm the grandfather here. Like, you guys are my children. You, Yaakov, are a family of individuals who are nice individuals, but you're related to me. You're a bunch of my grandchildren. Like, this is all natural. Like, there's nothing supernatural here. There's nothing holy or spiritual or different than anybody else. Right? And that's why they had to go down to Mitzrayim. Because had they not gone down to Mitzrayim, like, that had to be the counter to that argument of Yaakov, Bracha, you're not on mute, so we could hear you, like, a little bit in case you want to sneeze or something. right? So until they went down to Mitzrayim, they were a family of a bunch of righteous individuals. That's what they were. Lavan was right, so to speak. Right? They were a family. They were a bunch of righteous individuals. And the process of going through Mitzrayim, for whatever ordained reason Hashem decided this is the process that they had to go through, created them into a nation. Right? That's what this pasuk tells them. Arami ovi ovid v'yerid Mitzrayim. Right? They went down to Mitzrayim. V'yogar sham b'msemat v'hisham l'goy gadol atzim v'rav. That's where they grew into a nation. So again, Mitzrayim had to be the process in which they went from being a bunch of righteous individuals and a nice family to becoming the nation of Bnei Israel. And again, that's where the enmeshment of Hashem and Bnei Israel really stuck, so to speak, right? That was the Havtacha about also. So what happens here in Seilamad, and again, this is like important, and we're gonna a little bit go forward in the Haggadah in a little bit of a different way. Because what happens now could be extremely confusing. I remember I didn't understand what was going on in the Haggadah until I was like an adult, which is that we quote four consecutive psukim from one place in the Torah. And in rabbinic style, we quote the pasuk, and then we take apart the pasuk word by word by word to try to describe what's happening, and then we bring in other psukim to talk about the words that we're talking about in the pasuk that we quoted. And in some cases, we bring in another pasuk to talk about the words in the pasuk that we brought in to talk about the words in the pasuk that we quoted. Okay, so very quickly, it becomes like fractured and hard to understand, like, what did we just did, where that just went. Right? So again, that's why what I want to do here is actually, I'm going to skip over all of that fracturing into branches. Hi, Yelette. Okay, I'm going to skip all the fracturing into branches because again, otherwise it's like a pasuk being quoted to describe a pasuk being quoted to describe a piece of a pasuk that was just quoted. So again, it's like, it's instead, we're going to just do the headings and we're going to see that those are four consecutive psukim, and I'll show you where it's from. Where is it from? Wow, I still have Esther open on this computer for some reason. Okay, can you guys see it? Can you see my screen now? Where is it from? It's from Devarim, okay? The whole Haggadah is basically four consecutive psukim in Devarim. And it's the part of Devarim where we're bringing Bikurim. So we go to Eretz Yisrael, we plant our vineyards, we finally have our first fruits, and we're bringing our first fruits to the Beis HaMikdash, and we're thanking Hashem for them, okay? And there's around six psukim that we say. We skip the last two psukim. They're not included in the Haggadah, right? But look at this, right? V'lakach ha-kohen hatena, right? The kohen takes your basket of your first fruits, miyadcha, v'hinicho lifnei mizbeach Hashem alokecha, and he like waves it in front of the mizbeach, and you're supposed to say this. this Haggadah, right? And every, again, all that branching in the Haggadah branches off these four psukim. So what we're going to do is, I'm not going to read you any of the branching. I'm just going to read you the psukim. As we encounter them in the Haggadah, in this order, we encounter them, and then it branches it. But instead of reading you the branches, I'm just going to talk about the branches, again, according to the sort of Masorah of Rav Lichter on these, so that we get the story, right? We just get the headings and the story and what they mean to us. So this is what, the first one is this. You say, Arami Ovi Avi. Again, so what's the story happening here? By the way, in parentheses, right? We can probably have, I'm sure, we can, I can, you know, we can easily have an hour shiur about why Bikurim. Okay, I don't have like my favorite answer about that. I've heard stuff over the years that I don't remember because it didn't resonate with me particularly. I read a few things in advance of this year that were like nice, but didn't resonate with me particularly. There's like the pragmatic view, which is that, you know, after the Churban HaBayis, you know, you're not going to be able to, you can't, you wouldn't easily remember like the fractured different psukim if you were doing a historical account, that if Chazal was trying to tell you about Yetzias Mitzrayim from taking like a piece of Shmos over here and a piece of Shmos over here, a piece of Shmos over here. So this is like the most pithy place that you find it is in a Kurim. So like let's base it off that. So again, that's very pragmatic, right? I'm sure there's more to it. You know, there seems to be a linkage with Eretz Yisrael that it's not just about Yetzias Mitzrayim for the sake of Yetzias Mitzrayim, right? We learn about Yetzias Mitzrayim at the end result of Yetzias Mitzrayim, which is also getting to Eretz Yisrael and doing Avodas Hashem. So that is like a little bit more compelling to me, right? That we're quoting this in Bikurim, and why from Bikurim? Because Bikurim is part of our Avodas Hashem, right? And Yetzias Mitzrayim is part of our Avodas Hashem. It's not redemption for the sake of slavery and redemption for the sake of social justice and, you know, freeing the slaves. It's a point, right? There's a point to the Exodus, and we know the point of the Exodus, right? The point of the Exodus is Avodas Hashem. And again, the point of the exile was for the Exodus, right? The point of the Avodah, the point of slavery was so that we're redeemed, so that we could do Avodas Hashem. It's not that, oy vavoy, since there were a bunch of slaves and Hashem is like a really nice guy, he extended his hand into history and saved the slaves because like that, right? That's not the story here about B'nai Israel. It's that, that's what we just read about Arami Ovi, right? We had to go to Mitzrayim to become the nation that Hashem wanted us to be, intended us to be, right? Linked himself to history to make us. And again, we see that through the perspective of Avodas Hashem happening in Bikurim later on. Again, that's one way to read a Bikurim. I'm sure there are plenty. I know that there are plenty, plenty more. Okay, so good. So I'm just going to read you those pieces of Bikurim when we get there, as we go through it. Okay, and again, the Haggadah, if you map it out, branches all of the psukim off of these four. Okay. Okay, so again, Arami Avit Ovi, we talked about a little bit, Vayered Mitzrayim, right? And we say, Anusal Pi HaDibor, that Hashem intended them to go down to Mitzrayim, right? It wasn't an accident, it wasn't a happenstance of history. There was a famine, so they had to go down, right? Hashem brought them down to Mitzrayim on purpose to make them into this nation. And, right, Vayag Rasham Bim Seimaat, it was always, again, my parish that I'm saying right now is not things that I like to say, right? This is what the Haggadah is telling us with their branches, by the way, right? I'm giving you the highlights of the branches so that you see the pairs that the Haggadah is giving on itself, right? And again, we're going to follow that story through. Okay, they weren't permanently there and they weren't happenstance there. They were there and they knew it was going to be for a short amount of time to make them into this nation, which is what they get made into. And again, they grew as a nation there. Sorry, I'm just going to have to skip through my Haggadah. The next pasuk is, Vayareyu osanu ha-mitzrim vaya'anunu vayitnu aleinu avodah kasha. Right? That the Egyptians dealt harshly with us and oppressed us. They imposed heavy labor upon us. Again, so the point that Haggadah makes here is that, you know, the way that the Mitzrayim approached us wasn't like cheap slave labor. It was like, this is so nice. We accidentally got this nation. Let's have them build our pyramids for us. This is a great idea because then we won't have to build our own pyramids. Right? It wasn't a pragmatic approach to like slave labor, like cheap labor. Woohoo, let's get a lot done. Right? They were systematically trying to obliterate the Emunah of B'nai Israel. Again, that's how Chazal reads the slavery. Right? They talk about the fact that they gave the men the women's jobs and the women's the men's jobs, which is the best way that Chazal could teach us that this wasn't pragmatic, because that, if you're trying to get stuff done, that's a really good way to not get anything done, is by giving people a bunch of jobs that they can't do, right? But if you're trying to systematically obliterate, like, the hope and the fortitude and the resilience of people by psychological, like, torture, then that's a really good way to do it, All right, so again, that's what Mitzrayim was trying to do. They were trying to prevent us from becoming that nation. And of course, Hashem has promised us that we would become that nation in Mitzrayim. So we know who's going to win this battle. And again, that's what we're reading into it. That's the story that we're hearing here. Like, you knew only know about Hashem. Okay, again. And Vanitzak. But next pasuk, Vanitzak El Hashem Elokei Avosenu Vayishma Hashem Eskolenu Vayares Anyenu Vesamalenu Veslachatenu. We cried out to Hashem, our God, the God of our forefathers, Vayishma Hashem Eskolenu, when Hashem listened to our voices, Vayares Anyenu, when He saw our suffering, Vesamalenu Veslachatenu, and our misery and our oppression. Right, so again, we say here, Vanitzak El Hashem Elokei Avosenu. The proof text, right, the text that the Haggadah brings to talk about that, talks about Bnei Yisrael crying out from the work. We know that they cried out from the work, which is an interesting thing, right? Because if you're approaching, petitioning someone to help you, there's a few ways that you could petition someone to help you, right? You could petition, let's say, someone who you know is extremely powerful and could help you. And then you have, like, for example, I have a meeting tomorrow with Moshe Bain. And I want him to, like, who's the president of the OU, and I want him to help me, like, figure out something that I'm doing with my research, okay? So I have, like, this is, like, all the notes that I've been taking all day long, and, like, adding notes to notes, and then I also have it on the other side, and I have, like, another piece of paper that looks at me like that, right? I'm trying to, like, approach him and, you know, convey to him what it is that I'm asking and how it is that I need his help to do what it is that I'm trying to do. Right? That's like one approach for asking for help. And the other one is like what my kids do, which is that, like, you know, Shifra, my 4-year-old, she will, like, you know, cry and scream and, like, you know, throw a fit about the fact that I gave her, like, an applesauce for snack and I won't give her another applesauce for snack. Right. And then what happens? And then she, like, in the middle of her throwing a fit, she'll, like, bang her head on the wall and she'll start crying and be like, "Mommy, hold me." Right? And part of me is like, absolutely not. You, like, smacked your head on the wall because you were throwing an absolute fit and it was ridiculous. Right? And part of me is like, okay, I'm your mom. I'm like, of course. Oh, did you hurt yourself while you were throwing that fit? Right? So it's a very different way to petition for help, which is that, like, she's not thinking, how do I get my mom to help me? She's just like, I got hurt. I need my mom. Right? And again, that's how Bnei Yisrael cried out to Hashem. Vanitzak mehal avoda. They cried out from pain. It was like a reaction. It was like a snap reaction. They were suffering and they called out to Hashem, which is really an incredible thing to think about. Can you imagine that, right? They were enslaved for so long in this real oppression that was psychologically trying to manipulate them into losing resilience and hope. And still, when they were faced with hardship, their gut reaction was to cry out to Hashem, right? Can you imagine, like, let's say the Holocaust had happened for like 200 years instead of like 4. And there were people who were, like, born into slavery, or whatever you want to call that, oppression in the Holocaust. And then still, when they, like, you know, gave them whatever labor in the slave camps, they would, like, cry out to Hashem to help them. Right? It's really incredible. And basically, that's all Bnei Israel kept, right? They kept their culture, it seems to be, like, their language and their clothes, right? And their names. And their emunah. But they kept their emunah. And that was what Hashem heard. Right? Vayishma Hashem. Hashem hears it. And again, Elokei Avosenu, like, it's Mesorah, right? That's how they have the connection to Hashem. That's how they knew that Hashem had made this promise to save them, is from Hashem's connection to the Avos, which again was Yesh Me'ayin, like we learned before, and their connection to Hashem, who was the God of their forefathers, and Hashem hears. And again, he sees all the pain that they're in. And the last pasuk in this group, that's Esther. Is V'yotzeinu Hashem Mitzrayim b'yad chazaka b'zrona toya v'mor gadol v'osos v'mopsim. So again, can you imagine? All Yetzias Mitzrayim is that one buzzuk. That was the only buzzuk of the four that talks about Yetzias Mitzrayim. Everything else was like, again, it's only four psukim, which is incredible to think about. All the Haggadah, Magid, is four psukim, and only this one. Right? But that's the main buzzuk. Right? And here we have so much parashas. This is the place where you find the pasuk that's used to quote, to explain the pasuk that's used to explain the pasuk that's used to explain one of these words. Right? That's where you have it here. Because, like, here Chazal needs to delve into it. And they have to show you what's happening here. This is the point. This is the story of the Haggadah, right? This is the moral of the story, which is that Hashem then took it in his own hands. Right? You cannot mess with my people like that. I promise them. I created them Yesh Me'ayin. I sent them to Mitzrayim to turn them into a nation. And when I see that that nation has created something that has not lost their emunah in me, now it's time for me to swoop in. And again, here's where we say, right? Lo al yedei malach, but lo al yedei sarach, but lo al yedei shaliach, ela kadosh baruch hu ba'atzmo, hu bechvodo hu ba'atzmo, right? It's like, that is it. That is it. Hashem is the one who descended into history and took us out. Again, ani Hashem, right? Ani hu velo acher, ani velo malach, ani velo sarach, right? Again and again and again. And now we start talking about the makos, right? Now we start, hello, Rachel. Not connected to the audio yet. Hello, Rachel. Right? Now we start talking about the makos. And we go into the makos a little bit, not all that much here, right? But just kidding. We do go into the makos a lot here, right? We go into the makos. Here are some of the makos are referred to in this pasuk. And now again, so now this is it. We're done quoting the pasukim, and now we're gonna, now that we got ourselves into Yetzias Mitzrayim, so to speak, we worked ourselves into that story of the slavery and how we got to Yetzias Mitzrayim. Now we're gonna delve into the makos, and then we go to Yom Suf, and then we go to Dayenu, and then we go to Pesach Matzah Umara, right? That's the progression that happens in the Haggadah. So here we're talking about the makos, and you see, right? You see Chazal really want to get into it, right? They have like a whole debate, so to speak, right? The Chazak Ashtayim was running to Ashtayim. That pasuk itself that we just quoted, that pasuk itself is also referring to the makos. And then you have all the makos. We list all the makos. And then we say, the tzachadash ba'achav, which is a way of categorizing the makos into like three categories, right? Makos that taught us that Hashem is in charge of the little things, like all the little things in nature. And Hashem and the makos that taught us that Hashem is in charge of the larger things in nature, like, you know, like animals and the things that, and the makos that taught us that Hashem was in charge of the like elements of nature, right? Like barad, right? The elements, whatever you say it, right? And then makos bechoros, which basically taught us that Hashem is in charge of like everything, right? And again, Rav Lofter's read of makos bechoros is that, which is really interesting. I learned this in one of his shirim. He also talks about it in the Sefer a little bit. But he talks about the fact that like, it wasn't a punishment, right? The interesting thing is that Pesach, the name Pesach and Passover, all comes from from Makas Bechoros, right? That one word in Makas Bechoros, that Hashem passed over the houses of the Jewish people. Which you wouldn't think, like, you would think that this holiday would be called, like, Exodus holiday, or, like, Yetziah holiday, or, like, I don't know what else, something more exciting than, like, the passing over, which sounds like a little, you know, like, nice, but, like, not as exciting as a lot of the other headlines you could make a news report out of this for. Right, but he says like that is really where Hashem was most enmeshed in Bnei Israel, and where you see the biggest lesson, because Hashem by Makas Bechoros, he says Hashem just like descended into the world, and it wasn't that he killed anybody. It was just that it's a pretty passive name, isn't it? Yeah, exactly, Emily. Like Hashem descended into the world, and the consequence of that was that nothing else could exist when Hashem was existing in the world. He says you see the same phenomenon in the Kodesh Kedashim, right? If anyone enters the Kodesh Kedashim, they die. Not because they're being killed as a punishment, but because Hashem is in the Kodesh Kedashim, and when you have existence in the Kodesh Kedashim, no other existence could exist with that existence. So that Hashem just descended on Mitzrayim, and anything else that existed died. So I don't understand why only the Bechorim died and nobody else died. That's the part that I don't understand about this parish, but maybe I'll write Rav Lichter an email and ask him that. But again, working off this assumption, so the fact that Hashem passed over Bnei Yisrael, right? Bnei Yisrael basically had to make a marker that they were already affiliated with Hashem. They had to do the Korban Pesach and put the blood on the doors and be inside their houses and follow all these rules and structure, right? To make sure that they are like doing basically a avodas Hashem to align themselves with Hashem. But then once Hashem came down, they were already aligned with him. They could exist because they are part of Hashem's existence. And that's like the mind-blowing piece of the Pesach. Right, is that when Hashem descended into reality and anything else that existed died because you couldn't, there was no space for it. There was space for Bnei Yisrael because Bnei Yisrael were already part of Hashem. They were already part of Hashem's existence, which again is the same story. Do you hear it? It's the same story again and again. Hashem being enmeshed in history for the sake of Bnei Yisrael's existence, and Hashem being enmeshed in Bnei Yisrael's history for the sake of their continued history and existence. So again, that's all. Then you have. So how do you know that? Then, right, then there's this whole discussion about the makos versus the Yom Suf. How do we know that the Yom Suf was really greater than the makos? Which is interesting because, like, where else do we have this conversation about the Yom Suf being greater than the makos, right? But Chazal tell us that at the Yom, while in Mitzrayim, it was like Hashem punishing the nation of Mitzrayim vis-a-vis, for their actions, vis-a-vis the nation of Bnei Israel. At Yom Suf, it was Hashem punishing individual Mitzrayim, for their actions vis-a-vis individuals in Bnei Israel. It was basically Hashem taking a very direct accounting of every Mitzri for every bit of suffering that every Jew had gone through. So Yom Suf became a much more personal investment of Hashem al Bnei Yisrael, right? Not only is he taking this nation out of this other nation, but also every Jew Hashem is, you know, done that Jew's suffering to make sure that it is accounting, and done the pain that any of those Mitzrayim afflicted was recuperated, so to speak, from him specifically. So again, that's the comparison between Yom Suf and Mitzrayim, is that while one is a nation, Hashem in the history of the nation, the other one also taught us the history, the involvement of Hashem in each individual's history, which leads us to Dayenu. That's where it leads us. It leads us right into Dayenu, right? If you think about that, about Hashem in the history of Bnei Yisrael, not only in the history of Bnei Yisrael, but also in the history of each individual of Bnei Yisrael, you're left with like one emotion, which has to be gratitude. But not only gratitude, but gratitude that results in responsibility. Right? Each of these steps of Dayenu is basically saying, Dayenu what? Dayenu enough to like base our avodas Hashem off of this. All right? That's where Dayenu takes us. It takes us right into gratitude of the gifts that Hashem has given us with each piece of this, every piece of it, and the resulting responsibility that we feel, again, from gratitude, you know, from joy and from realization of Hashem in our history of reciprocal avoda. Okay, and that leads us, once we're done with Dayenu, it leads us into Pesach Matzah Umara, which we should talk about whether or not we could do this next week, what day would make any sense to do it and whatever, so let's talk about that now. But that's where we would start. We would do Pesach Matzah Umara and finish Magid and maybe, again, have some sort of practice repetition, what's it called, like a dress rehearsal before Seder night. Okay.